Hello and welcome to Radio Verulam 92.6 FM, and today we've got a very special guest, former world number one for squash, former world champion, and with 33 titles to his name, we have the one, the only, Nick Matthew.
Good evening.
So it's great to talk to you today, and I want to get right in. You were famed for your stamina. Is that something that you worked on, or did you have this naturally?
Yeah, good question. I started off as a kid. I was a bit of a cross-country runner, so it was something that, whilst I'm not sure I had it naturally, I was sort of blessed with a good physique for the sort of endurance side of the sport. And then it was later, as the sport of squash evolved and got more powerful, more dynamic, I had to, the hardest thing for me was to train the specifics of that, sort of all of the power and the repeated speed and the being able to cope with fatigue, but then keep your sort of intensity high. So I had the natural stamina to start with, and then I had to work really hard on the specifics of the sport.
So kind of following on from that, you managed to keep playing at the top level of squash well into your 30s. So what were the biggest changes that you had to make to your play style as you got older?
Yeah, I played until I was 38, so proud of the longevity. I had 20 years on the tour. Started when I was 18, seems a lifetime ago now. And the game pretty much in squash just got faster and faster. Some of that was linked to the scoring system changing from going to a traditional point per point when you could only serve versus now point per rally. It was shortened game now to 11 points from 15. And then also the tin that you have to hit the ball above went 2 inches lower. So that coupled with technology and glass courts meant the game was just getting faster and faster and faster over the years, which, you know, you had to adapt and stay ahead of the game. And when I got older, I found that was even harder to maintain at that top end speed. So I had to really train that hard, and maybe the volume was less than it was in the early days, but you learn how to train smart and be clever with your body to try and help the longevity side of it as well.
So would you say as well that you had to adapt your style from the nickel power era of like deep patient tactics to the El Shabagi? Okay, so would you say as well that you have a favourite game or favourite final that comes to mind when you think of your career?
Yeah, it's a tough one because I think the best I ever played, my best performance was the British Open final in 2012. It was against Rami Ashore. It was a month or two before London were due to host the Olympics. Obviously, squash missing out on that. I would have been probably in perfect form to contend for a medal. You know, I would have been eyeing up gold around that time. I was number one in the world, and I won the British Open final in London's 02 arena and beat Rami, who was the world number one at the time. I was two, beating three straight games in the final, and that was one of the games, that a few games, probably count on one hand in my whole career, playing over 1,000 matches, that everything went to plan. Very rarely does the variable involved in squash. However, one of the most satisfying wins was the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow, the men's singles final, because I had knee surgery 5 weeks before the event and it looked like I wasn't going to be able to make it. So to win the gold and beat James Sorsop in the final, it probably wasn't my best performance. There was a lot of scrapping and hanging in. It wasn't probably the best squash I've played, but in terms of the journey and sort of the backstory, it was probably my most satisfying win as well.
Well, speaking of Ashore, Gaultier and Willstrop, you had many fraught rivalries, I would say. I don't know if you'd call them rivalries, but a lot of people do describe it that way. Which rival would you say you enjoy playing most, or maybe just which player in general? It doesn't have to be the rival.
Yeah, I think, you know, I loved, you know, James was probably the one, James Willstrop was one, probably the top player who I had the best head-to-head with. In that time, it was never easy, but I had a good success ratio against James in major finals. Rami Ashore was probably the player that made me go away and study my game and work out how I could improve more than any other because of the unique challenges that he sort of, you know, you encountered against him as a player. And then I loved the rivalry against Gaultier as well, sort of passionate Frenchman. The English-French rivalry was amazing as well. So you know, on top of that, probably Mohamed El Shabagi as well, that sort of clash of generations. There was about 10 or 11 years between us. So
fighting against someone who's only getting better whilst you're trying not to get any worse when you get older. That was a sort of unique challenge as well. So there's a few really good rivalries there.
Yeah, one of the things that set you apart from your rivals, your almost trademark shot, was your volley drop from across court. When did you develop this formidable tool in your arsenal? Was it because you saw it as a way to win a lot of points, would reply, or was this just a natural shot that you instinctively developed?
Yeah, it's a bizarre one. I've just come back from Ireland where I did some coaching clinics with some kids, and everyone seems to see that shot as my trademark. And it wasn't, and they were asking me a similar question, and you know what, I think it was sort of almost a bit by accident. It was just a shot that I sort of fell upon in more ways than one. You know, I sort of, the style that I played it, I almost fell upon the shot, as in the way my leg and my racket sort of fell on the ball. I just seemed to time that one quite nicely off the cross court, and it did become a signature shot, and it was one that when I was playing well, you know, I think every player in every sport, certainly individual sports, has something that is their confidence shot. They know that when they're playing well, that shot goes in and they take confidence in the rest of their game with that. I used to try and in the end set traps so that players would be forced into playing it into my strength area. I probably had a weaker area in the back corner on the forehand, so they were probably trying to exploit that weakness, but then to do that they had to go through a strength, so it was sort of fraught with danger, I hope, for them. But yeah, a little bit of a trademark shot that I sort of stumbled across on a bit by accident, to be honest.
Well, kind of moving, maybe not a negative, but the hard fought games, and was there an opponent that you always thought, oh goodness, I've got to play them now?
Yeah, I think latterly, you know, Mohamed Ashtabagi, he's been, you know, he's been world number one for 2 or 3 years already by the time he was 27, so he got to the top really soon. I remember thinking in the later years, you know, you knew that it would have to be a war to come out on the right side against him. And as I said, as you were getting towards, you know, past your peak, shall we say, to be polite to my body, that was always an incredible challenge, because you knew you had to put on an incredible performance and go to some depths that weren't always there when you get older. I knew that I could compete with him on my best days, but then the worst days, you know, there was a lot more inconsistency as you got older, and someone like him would just exploit it if you weren't at your absolute, absolute best.
So moving on from opponents to locations, and recently quite a quirky location was a game in a DPD warehouse, but was there a favourite location that you like to play in across the world, and maybe why?
I think the unique thing about squash is being able to put that glass court anywhere in the world, you know, erecting a stadium from nothing. And it always fascinates me how quickly these things go up and then get taken down and disappear. And I think, you know, you can put it anywhere. We've had some amazing venues on the waterfront harbours across the world, like Hong Kong, Shanghai, etc. But the two for me are, the iconic one is the pyramids in Cairo. The squash court there in front of the pyramids, a very, very iconic image for our sport. And then the other one is Grand Central Station, the Tournament of Champions in New York, just always created a unique atmosphere for the sport and sold our sport to a different sort of audience, really making us feel like we were on Broadway for the week.
Yeah, that was probably the one that I would have said is my favourite, the Grand Central Station one. It's such an amazing, unique location. But is there a dream location that you would have loved to have played in, or, you know, you never know, you might play in the future
For me, it would have been Horse Guards Parade, London 2012 Olympics. Would have just been we might have been a little bit reliant on the English weather not to rain, but we could have put a little roof on it. I'm sure it would have been fine.
That would have been absolutely fantastic. So one of the final things that I want to talk about, is there any changes that you think that the sport needs to do going forward?
Yeah, I think, you know, the buzzword at the moment in sport is urban. You know, we've missed out for the last Olympics for sports like skateboarding and breakdancing, who, you know, very clearly don't have the world structure in place in terms of the world tour that squash has and a number of players, competitors around the world. They don't have anything like that sort of governance of the sport. However, you know, things are moving in that youth sort of, you know, urban, as I said, demographic. So I think we need to try and do that. I think one of the big things I've seen, you know, is the there's a interactive squash where basically the front wall becomes an iPad, and
you can hit the ball against him, play all sorts of games to sort of get him kids into the game, but right the way through to elite. You know, I think that sort of really, you know, attracts the mentality of people today. And also keeping going forward with these venues that showcase the sport to a new audience, that along with probably trying to get it on terrestrial TV that little bit more. We've got a really good product online now with the Squash TV, and we get it on BT Sport, we get it on Facebook now, there's a deal there for the streaming, and YouTube, it's fantastic. But I think, you know, we miss that sort of one or two tournaments a year where it's on terrestrial TV that we can really sort of grow our audience.
So for speaking urban, linking it to that, what would you say to our listeners in St Albans who might want to get involved in squash? What are some starting tips to get them going?
The starting tip, I mean, the first thing is, you know, there was always that analogy, you know, do you play squash to get fit or do you get fit to play squash? And I think for me, it's the first one. You know, there's no better way, no better sport to play to try and, you know, improve your fitness or simply get fit. You know, it's, you know, a mile a minute, something's happening, it's full action, nothing is dull, you know, something's happening all the time. The next point starts, you know, 10 seconds after the last one. And, you know, it's a great way to go down and great sport to go down for fitness. And it's consistently voted the world's healthiest sport in terms of calories burned per hour. So fantastic for that. Otherwise, I'd really sort of encourage people to, you know, check it out online, even go and see some good level squash played at your local club, or if there's a tournament near you, like the Canary Wharf Classics in London, a major tournament a year, get some tickets to that, go see it live, because see how it should be played type thing before you, and that will really help your game, sort of take your game to the next level.
And finally to you, Nick, is there any causes that you'd like to talk about today, raise awareness for?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's close to my heart is Sheffield Children's Hospital. It's something that, being a dad now myself, we've got a little girl, Charlotte, who's four, and we've got a little boy on the way any week now. And I think it's every parent's worst nightmare for their kids to, we sort of support the charity in the hope that we'll never have to go there ourselves, if that makes sense. You know, yeah. It's one of those charities that you hope you never have to go there, but it's probably the best facility outside of Great Ormond Street in London in the whole country is in Sheffield for kids. So that's something that's dear to heart. Lots of friends and family members who have been involved there, and they do lots of links with sport. They've got patrons such as Dan Walker, Jessica Ennis-Hill, Michael Vaughan, Matt Fitzpatrick, and, you know, really close to my heart as a chef. I play with Team Theo, which is their mascot, on the back of all my shirts. So it's something that's really, literally close to my heart.
And just quickly, is there any links or any website that our listeners should go to help support this cause?
Sure, yeah. You can Google Sheffield Children's Hospital, the Children's Hospital, so tchc.co.uk, and you'll find everything that they are trying to do for sport and, you know, kids, not just in Sheffield, but they have kids from all around the country that come for their specialist support.
Well, thank you very much today, Nick, for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you, and we wish you all the best in your future endeavours.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for talking.